Welcome to the Incession Film Podcast for March 2nd, 2014. This is episode 54, and I'm JD Duran.
And this is Tim Costa.
And this week on the show, Blake is out once again. And if you guys want to actually be thinking of Blake, he's been in the hospital the last 2 weeks, which is why he wasn't on the show last week and this week. He's okay. He's fine. He's had a couple of surgeries, but he's definitely been under the weather, not feeling good. So our thoughts are definitely out there for Blake. But Tim from the First Time Watchers podcast filling in as my co-host this week, and couldn't have had a better fill-in. So thanks for being here, Tim.
No problem. But I think you could have found much better, more quality people.
No, it's definitely great to have you here on the show this week. And we are going to be reviewing Liam Neeson's latest film, Nonstop. And since the Oscars are today, and we're recording this before the Oscars tonight, so we're not necessarily going to be discussing them. But to go along with that theme, we are going to be discussing our top three worst Oscar winners, which for me, especially as I was doing research for this, I found out there are like a million to choose from. So that should be a fun conversation. This week, we were supposed to start our brand new Wes Anderson movie series, which we haven't done one in a while, so we were excited to get back into doing another one. But with Blake being out, we decided to just kind of hold that back for another week or so. So our third segment this week, we're going to discuss some of the latest movie news that was out there in the Independent Spirit Awards, which was last night. So that should be a fun segment to talk about as well. And of course, we'll finish off the show with films we got to see over the last week. But before we get into it, Tim, how was your week, man?
Oh, it was pretty good, man. You know, I was on vacation the previous week, so coming back to work was a little bit challenging. You know, pretty busy work week, but
sure.
Hey, you know, I was still able to catch some pretty cool movies and TV shows.
Awesome.
For yourself?
Yeah, my week was very, very busy too. Work is just really starting to ramp up since I got this new job, and things are really starting to roll, which is fun. But it's also keeping me very, very busy. But I did get to watch quite a few movies this week. I watched some of the Oscar-nominated documentaries that I hadn't got to see yet, so I was trying to get caught up on some of that. So, yeah, it's been a fun week. Very, very busy. Very excited for the Oscars tonight. Should be a good one for sure. But all right, Tim, I think we have a really good show, so let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast. This is episode 54. Tim, what about Nonstop, though?
Nonstop? Starring the Liam Neesons from Tooken?
What the hell was that?
Everything's under control.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Is the captain okay?
Excuse me. Dr. Masseur.
I didn't do anything.
Come with me now.
Marshal! Is someone going to tell us what the hell is going on?
I need your help.
Hey, people are scared. We have a right to know why you searched us. Why this plane almost went down. Hey!
Marshal, you and I are going to have a conversation.
Don't you walk away from me.
Doctor, cockpit, now.
You're letting that guy in the cockpit?
Here's what's going to happen. You're going to go back to your seat. You're going to sit down. And you're going to shut up.
But what?
From one cop to another. You know.
All right, Nonstop is directed by Jean-Claude Serra and stars Liam Neeson, Julianne Moore, Michelle Dockery, sort of Lupita Nyong'o. That's a whole thing we'll get into, and a few other people as well. So, Tim, we're talking about an air marshal stuck in the skies, getting all kinds of crazy text messages. What did you think about the movie Nonstop?
Well, look, if we're talking about a movie, you know, that's being dumped in February or the beginning of the year, and it's starring Liam Neeson, it sure has better entertain me. And if it's not going to be Liam Neeson, it should be Jack Bauer. But thankfully, it is Liam Neeson. And I got to say, I was entertained throughout the whole film. The promos, the ads, the trailers for this film served it well. It presented a thriller, a mystery in the vein, something maybe even you could compare it to Flight Plan, starring Jodie Foster.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. and it exactly what it promised a mystery throughout that kind of goes a little bit silly in the last third of the film. And I know we're going to try to avoid spoilers here, but mm-hmm. the reasoning towards the end of the film is a little janky, I think.
Yeah.
But I think overall it delivered on its promise of a mystery thriller action vehicle for Liam Neeson to kick some ass. And that's exactly what he did. for me, at least. What about you?
Yeah, I'm actually right in that ballpark as you are. I thought the first two acts of the film were really good. I really enjoyed what was going on. Like you're saying, it was this nice little mystery thriller that was kind of playing out. I don't know if it was something that you'll necessarily remember at the end of the year, but I think it's one of those films you can just go into and just kind of shut off for a couple hours, not have to think about a whole lot, and then just enjoy what you're getting to see in front of you. And I think it really delivered on that for the most part. Like you, though, the third act of this film does take a little bit of a weird turn. I thought the reveal of the mystery was not well executed. And maybe we can kind of debate some of the script there, because I do think that it was well written, in my opinion. I don't think it was necessarily well handled. And part of that, I think, goes back to the casting. I don't necessarily think the villains, once they're revealed, are necessarily that great. They definitely weren't menacing on any level. And I kind of just wish that it was handled differently, because it is kind of an interesting premise, I think. But for the most part, it's one of those what you see is what you get. But, you know, Liam Neeson kind of doing his thing. And I thought that was very interesting. But what did you think about some of his character and some of his backstory? It's not necessarily something we haven't seen before, but in this instance, we're dealing with someone who's an alcoholic who has this really tragic backstory, but it's not often we get to see them in this air marshal role. But what did you think of that and how that was handled?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. I was worried at the beginning of the film when they show him waiting in his car, ready to go into the the terminal, and you see him, you know, pouring a cup of you know, whiskey or bourbon or whatever it is. And it immediately sets off like, oh, okay, this is a guy that has a drinking problem, and this is gonna be a cliche storyline. But
they don't hide from that at all.
No, they don't. But it is, you know, one thing that I was struck by was how much smoking was involved in this PG-13 film. Because nowadays in a lot of PG-13 films, you don't see any smoking at all. Sure. And it was just interesting to see at the beginning where he is going through, he's in the bathroom or I see him getting ready or something like that. And you see him take out a roll of duct tape, and you're like, well, what's that for? And then later on, a few minutes later, you see him in the bathroom in the air,
on the airplane,
putting it over the smoke detector. So I was like, oh, okay. But I guess that is written in there, is put in there by either the writer or the director, is to say, oh, hey, he's someone who you know, bends the rules, gets around the rules, and knows how to play around the federal airline regulations or whatever, you know. He's someone who knows all the tricks of the trade, but you know, and he's a weathered man. I guess that's another thing to add character to his person, is that he's, you know, smokes and he drinks, and he has stubble, you know, and I don't know. Tell you, it is a partially well-written movie. It's a partially well-directed movie. Jean-Claude Serra, I think, also directed Unknown, also starring Liam Neeson, which is a movie I've completely forgotten about. I barely remember anything from that film.
Yeah, same here.
However, I think I will remember this movie more simply because of the silliness that goes on, the action, you know, that's in it, that's presented in it, that he's able to display of, you know, trying to subdue some of these passengers, trying to fight his way through, well, the trailer gives it away, you know,
sure,
through
a
plane that has a hole in it, you know?
Yeah.
So there are good things in here. I'll give you an example. Like, there is an interesting post 9/11 look at this film, at the people,
yes,
that are on the plane, you know, and I really appreciated that because it doesn't fall into a lot of the cliches of, oh, well, this guy is automatically the terrorist, you know?
Yeah.
There are several different characters, passengers that are displayed in this movie of all different races and ethnicities, and it doesn't fall into the cliche of pointing at this one guy and staying focused on him for a long time. They immediately go to this one person and say, oh, hey, he can help in a certain situation.
Yeah.
And also not only that of the ethnicity range, but also the mindset of, you know what, if somebody is feared to maybe trying to take over this airplane, you know, people are going to step up. People are going to put themselves on the line in order to take action.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, going with that theme, I mean, I completely agree with that. I mean, there is that one character that, you know, he's the Muslim type character that they throw in there. And they definitely foreshadow some of that early on in the film. And then they kind of flip it on its head, like you were saying, that they use him to kind of help the situation, not necessarily bring it down. And I love how they're kind of tearing down those walls a little bit with that. I going back to the 9/11 theme that you were talking about, that's part of the script that I thought was pretty interesting. I wish it was handled a little bit better from a direction standpoint, but I thought from the script standpoint, I thought it was kind of interesting the way that they kind of lay out some of the way that people kind of feel that the way things have been handled since then, how it necessarily may not have gotten greater since then. So I thought it was an interesting premise. I just kind of wish they would have taken it maybe a little bit step further.
Well, I mean, also you got to consider the director, who's not that well known, at least in the States, and
sure,
time
sure
of year that they're putting this out. Based on the trailers, I'm not expecting going into this looking for a great post 9/11 theological debate or anything like that.
Oh, sure, sure.
It's just interesting that it was written into there with, you know, a little bit of thought, you know, and
not
fully examined. And I don't think many people who are going to see this, obviously, you know, this was the number one film over the weekend in the box office. And I don't think most people going into this are going to look for that, you know.
While I do agree with that, I guess my counter argument to that is, if you're going to throw it in there, then just kind of go for it. Because I feel like once they reveal some of that stuff, and especially when they write it into the bad guys that eventually that we see, it just isn't very believable in that. It just doesn't kind of come across as something that really had any strength or any concrete to it at all. And kind of like what we were saying, the first two acts of this film were kind of strong. They weren't terrible by any means. And then the third act kind of goes into this a little bit of a different direction. So I don't necessarily disagree with you, because, you know, with the kind of film that we're talking about, especially in February, you can just kind of shut off a little bit. But at the same time, I also think you had something interesting there that you could have really explored and really done something with, that I think was just a huge missed opportunity.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how huge of a missed opportunity is. Once again, it's all about your expectations of what you're looking for in a film like this.
True.
And at its core, it's an action thriller, a vehicle for Liam Neeson. And speaking of Liam Neeson, I got to say, this guy is 61 years old now, and it's pretty remarkable how well of a niche he's made in the action market. You know,
yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I'll say that, you know, I think he's done better for himself at this stage of his career than somebody like Harrison Ford has.
Oh yeah, completely
who's
agree.
Who's around the same age, maybe, you know, a little bit older, I think, but he's done a good job of choosing the right roles, and at least, you know, working with this director, you know, I guess from unknown, he had some fight scenes which were pretty okay, I think. I honestly don't remember. sure. Yeah, he's done a good job, and I liked his performance in here. I think it's fitting of the script that's given him. And
yeah, I agree.
I'll tell you one person I did not like, who I thought was completely miscast, was Julianne Moore. I thought her character was shrill. I thought it was unnecessary. I think it could have been given to another actress. And I just honestly, for an actress who I do really enjoy for the most part, I just did not like her in this role.
I didn't like her in that role, and I didn't like Lupita Nyong'o either. I mean, we have an actress that, you know, very well could win Best Supporting Actress tonight at the Oscars. Yeah. And Lupita says maybe three words in this entire movie.
Well,
granted, they probably filmed this before all of this kind of came out, but still, it just is kind of disappointing to see that kind of talent there just completely wasted. But even going back to Julianne Moore, I totally agree with you. I feel like that was completely wasted as well. She's not really doing a ton in the movie. They kind of foreshadow some things that would kind of come up later just to kind of reveal these other things. But you can really interchange Julianne Moore with any other actress, and you would pretty much get away the same thing. And I didn't necessarily care for the way the character was written anyway, because she's not necessarily – maybe this is a slight spoiler, but she's not necessarily someone that – has huge impacts into the movie later on. Although there is some of that, they kind of tease some of that. But to me, the reason I say that is because early on when we first see her character, there's so many things there that are forced and contrived to try to pull the story further later on in the movie that just didn't work for me. I mean, I like Julianne Moore. I thought she did a fine job. To me, I just didn't really care for the way that character was written.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. But and when you talk about early on in the film, it's like they force her character to be written into for her to sit next to.
Yes.
Liam Neeson. And I don't know where that problem originates, whether it's in the screenplay before Julianne Moore is cast, or they cast Julianne Moore and say, well, we got to give her a little bit more of a prominent role.
Sure.
Or dialogue, we got to rewrite it a little bit. So, it's tough. It just didn't honestly work for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It didn't work for me either. There was just too many things that they were trying to just kind of force into your face that didn't really work at all. But one thing, I guess, that I just kind of want to get back to a little bit is when we were talking about Liam Neeson's character and kind of the smoking and stuff at the beginning of the film. One of the reasons I think they throw that in there is because they were doing a ton of foreshadowing with like every character almost. And there's one instance where he's outside smoking before he actually walks into the airport, and this random guy just kind of walks up to him, which has huge implications later on in the film. To me, I didn't necessarily need all of that, and I also felt like they were revealing some of the mystery a little too soon, because at some point, even though you didn't know that character that Liam Neeson was talking to or any of the other ones that he ran into in the airport, because there were several others that you knew at some level that all of them were going to have an impact, and they did. And to me, I think that just kind of took a little bit of the wind out of the sails, and I just kind of wish they would have focused on the character. If you want to do the cliche backstory, then that's fine, but focus on that and then let it play out. Because I feel like once the mystery was starting to reveal, it didn't hit as hard as it could have, I think.
Yeah, going back to the mystery, you know, I'll tell you, one of the great things in the trailer was the overlay of the text messaging on the screen, you know, on the, you know, visible to, you know, the audience.
Yeah.
And if you've seen the trailers, you know what we're talking about. I was a little worried because at the beginning, when he starts receiving these text messages, we see them on the screen that he's watching, you know, and as the camera is pointed at his cell phone. So I was like, oh, is this another one of those marketing techniques where they had a really cool effect on the ads, but they're not going to feature it in the movie? But fortunately, they evolve it into it does
Big part of the movie.
Become a big part of the movie. And there's a really cool effect. I got to say, you know, it's a PG-13 film, so they can't have any swearing or any F-bombs, I should say. Yeah. So there's a really cool effect of where he's looking at a damaged screen. And there are two F-bombs that are covered up by the damage on the screen in the graphic overlay, which I think is really well done.
Yeah.
It's just very inventive, I think.
I agree. Yeah, there was some really great tricks that they used throughout the movie like that, too. There was also one really fun camera shot that I liked where it was focused on Liam Neeson on the front of the plane, and then it kind of panned out outside of the plane and then kind of moved to the back and then kind of zoomed back in, which I thought was kind of interesting too.
Oh, you like that? See, I thought that was too chintzy. I thought it was too hacky. I didn't like that because it just shows off the CGI capabilities, which aren't all that great in that camera move anyways.
I think the reason I liked it is because I think it was the timing of it, because it was right in the middle of this important piece of the story, and to me it just kind of enhanced the thrilling aspects of it, because they were going from one serious situation to another serious situation, and to me I think it just kind of collaborated to make this nice moment. Maybe outside of that, if it was used in a different context, then perhaps that would be true. For me, I liked it in that moment, though.
One thing I want to bring up is the reveal of the bad guy, and I'm not going to reveal who it is, of course, but I just want to say that the way it's handled isn't executed well, because the whole premise is trying to figure out who is sending these text messages, sending these text messages, and once they figure it out, it's never really explained how this person was sending the text messages. You know, they go early on in the film looking at the video screens of the cameras that are on board and trying to circle passengers, you know, on the screen that may be sending text messages at the same time Liam Neeson is, to try to catch that person. But the way they go about trying to manufacture, you know, the explanation, it never explains how this person was sending the text messages.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They kind of abandoned that altogether. And another thing with that is that they are sort of a part of when Liam Neeson is trying to come up with a plan to kind of save everyone on board. They're in those meetings. Like, they're a part of what is going on there, and they're not doing anything to necessarily stop it. Now, I kind of understand that they're doing that to kind of further the story and try to make them think that, oh, you know, we're on Liam Neeson's side. But to me, I also feel like if this was a real life situation, that kind of wouldn't make sense a whole lot. But the third act does get very messy, and they kind of do abandon what was working in the first two acts.
And I'm trying to work my way around spoilers.
It can get difficult.
the bad person who the plans are revealed as to how this person will escape the plane is through parachute. And I'm just wondering how this person is going to jump out of this plane. Like, what is the plan there?
Yeah. And again, that's never revealed either. I mean, I guess they're just going to open the hatch and go for it. I mean, yeah, who knows?
But let's talk about the most important shot of this film. It's the shot that you see on the poster.
Oh, yeah.
It's the shot that you see in the end of the trailer. Yeah. It's the money shot of Liam Neeson falling with the grab of the gun floating into the air and making the money shot. I was not disappointed. That thrilled the hell out of me.
Oh, really? See, I was quite the opposite. I thought that was part of the reason why I was a little disappointed with the third act. Which is cool. I mean, I love that we can see that on opposite spectrums. But for me, I thought that they were kind of lazy there. Like, the gun kind of, as it starts to float into the air, I didn't think the visual effects there was very good. And I thought Liam Neeson kind of floating in the air wasn't well shot either. I mean, I think it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen by any means, but it also wasn't great. And I thought that kind of took some of the wind out as well.
JD, I have to ask you, how does it feel to be wrong?
Oh, I don't think that I am.
It's okay.
But that's okay. I mean, I think for the most part we're in the same ballpark. But there wasn't a whole lot of the third act that I liked. I also thought that, again, without getting the spoilers, it's kind of hard. But some of the final sequences was very ambiguous. It was very confusing, and as far as how some of that stuff played out, and I guess we can have a short spoiler discussion afterwards. But none of the third act to me made any sense. I mean, everything up until then was fine. It was smooth. It was thrilling. And then it just turned into this huge mess.
When I realized that it was going to turn into a bunch of silly ridiculousness, I absolutely bought in. I actually just went with it, and I was laughing throughout the last third of this film.
Well,
I went with my wife, and I was just almost on the floor laughing out so hard. And she had a big grin on her face too. And I'll tell you, I enjoyed it. I went with it. I knew how silly it was going to be. I did not expect to maintain any of the serious tones it tried to bring up in the first two thirds of the film. I just went with it. I knew that the explanation, I realized that was silly and stupid. It didn't make any sense. There's so many things that don't make any sense, but I thought that the action was well directed. I thought the events unfolded in a timely, well-reasoned manner, I guess, and it entertained me, and that's exactly what I said at the end of the film. This movie entertained me.
Yeah, I mean, it was entertaining on a lot of levels, and I guess if you look at it that way, it could become a little comedic there toward the end. For me, it didn't really quite work. I was mostly just kind of lost, and I had pretty much lost this interest by that point. But if you really sit back and you just kind of turn things off, though, I think it's pretty easy to kind of fall into that territory that you were just talking about. But all right, well, any final thoughts, and what grade would you give Nonstop?
Final thoughts is that I did have a lot of fun. I think the writers had something going there in the first two thirds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it wasn't taken very seriously as the movie went on. But overall, I think it's worth a rental if it comes on HBO or whatever movie channel later on. I think you would be fine watching it. It's worth your time. Maybe not your money. I think it's worth your time for a rainy day movie. My grade would probably be a B.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't think this movie is completely terrible. It is probably something that you'll find on TNT or FX or something like that coming up here in the next few months. But I thought there were some interesting themes that they had chances to explore that just weren't well executed, as we talked about. But overall, I mean, there was definitely some things working here that I really liked. And yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely one worth checking out at some point. I gave this movie a B-. But yeah, right there in that same ballpark as you. We do not have a video review of this up, but I do have a full review of this up on our website at incessionfilm.com. If you agree or disagree, just leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/incessionfilm, or you can tweet us at incessionfilm. All right, Tim, coming up next is the Incession Film Top 3, and we're going to be talking about our top 3 worst Oscar winners, since the Oscars are tonight. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Incession Film Top 3 is brought to you by the amazing and awesome First Time Watchers podcast. And this is normally where I tell you why it is awesome and why you should check it out. But on this occasion, since we have the awesome Tim from the First Time Watchers podcast, I'm going to throw it to you, Tim, and I want you to tell the people why people should listen to your podcast, because it is pretty awesome.
You're right. It's awesome. It's awesome. Everything is awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I co-host a show with my good friends Walter Vinci and Hermano da Silva. And like you said, the First Time Watchers podcast, it is a podcast that where we talk about movies that we've never seen before, whether they're new, old, or something that's on all of our lists of shame. It's, you know, like we just celebrated our 100th episode. We had you for part one of that 100th episode.
Ton of fun.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. And in that film, in that show, we actually did review films we have seen only because in Pulp Fiction and Goodfellas, only because it was a celebration, you know, of our 100th episode. But normally, you know, we review, you know, any film, older film, whether it's something like Fritz Lang's is M, we did several weeks ago. And we also reviewed the Lego Movie. So, like I said, you know, new and old, this is really a show that we like to do to broaden our film knowledge. And, you know, when we reviewed M, it's part of our current decade-by-decade film series so that we can look at a lot of the older films. You know, we also looked at The Wild Bunch and Seven Samurai. All three of us had never seen those movies, and they were on our list of shame because we really enjoyed them. And not only do we talk about these movies, we also have a section where we talk about the movies we've seen on our own in that previous week. We will talk about some of the latest movie trailers. I know several months ago Hermano brought up the Nonstop trailer, and he was excited to see it, as was I. And at the end of the show, we have a movie recommendation. It's kind of usually related to the main review of the week in some way. But yeah, we have a lot of fun, and you know, we just we've been very fortunate to have a number of listeners like you to be able to contribute.
Yeah, and it's a really great show. I think one of my favorite parts about it is that you guys are you can tell that you guys are really good friends. The dynamics you guys have with one another are terrific, very entertaining. Yeah, definitely worth your time. So please go find First Time Watchers on iTunes, subscribe, please leave them a review, like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter. I promise you, you're definitely not going to regret following these guys.
Thank you, JD.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 54. And since the Oscars are going on tonight, we are going to be discussing our top three worst Oscar winners, because as everyone knows, Tim, the Academy always gets it wrong. So let's figure out some of the best ones out there. So but before we get into it, did you have any specific criteria that you used that to pick your list?
Well, criteria, you know, I was pretty loose with the criteria, whether it was specific or general, you know, whether it was a specific movie or or director or actor or whatever, or even, you know, over the course of the career of a certain person or not winning over the course of their career. So I think that'll be revealed in my top three.
For me, I kept things actually pretty personal. So these are kind of picks that that rank pretty high on my personal list. So I didn't necessarily look at maybe some of the biggest snubs of all time, considering, you know, the stature of, you know, the person or the film or whatever. And there's a lot of those that we could definitely get into for sure. But for my top three, they're definitely very close to my chest. And so that's kind of where I kept my criteria. So, all right, that being said, Tim, what is your number three?
Well, my number three is Shakespeare in Love winning over Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, a good one.
Saving Private Ryan, I think, is one of the best war films ever made. It's one of the best films of the 90s. And the fact that something like Shakespeare in Love could be a better, considered a better film than Saving Private Ryan is pretty ridiculous to me. I don't know. It's just, I really cannot give enough praise to Saving Private Ryan. It probably is a very personal thing with me, whether or not it is a justifiable viewpoint. I'm sure that there are people out there who would debate this, but I honestly was shocked that year that Shakespeare in Love won.
Yeah, that is a very good honorable mention for me. That is definitely one I have on my list as well. There is no way that it was better than Saving Private Ryan. And I mean, just to think about war films in general, it's kind of hard to argue against that one being, could be the best of all time war film, or it's definitely up there for sure. And for me, that's very, very good honorable mention. And again, that's another one kind of close to my chest as well, so I could get angry with that one pretty quickly. For my number three, you know, again, I have to emphasize that these picks are personal to me, because maybe some people will disagree with me on this one, but I had to put this one on my list. And I am talking about The Shawshank Redemption, losing to Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump's a good film. I have nothing against Forrest Gump and Tom Hanks at all. But for me, The Shawshank Redemption is in my top five of all time. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love Frank Darabont's film and everything that it had going for it. And it, to me personally, it's far and away better than Forrest Gump. I would have been happy with Pulp Fiction winning over Forrest Gump, quite honestly, either. And maybe the sting would have been a lot less, because I do love Pulp Fiction, as we talked about on your podcast this last week.
Yeah,
I would have been happy with that. But for me, The Shawshank Redemption is one of my favorite movies ever. And for it to lose to Forrest Gump, to me, is a little bit of a joke. But
about a quiz show for that year as well.
Yeah, another very, very good one. And I saw something earlier today that said, I guess there, I didn't read the details into it, but it was something along the lines of Forrest Gump by fans was voted the best Oscar winner for Best Picture ever.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. So,
I love that film. It's a great film, but how it's better than any other, I mean, yeah, it's almost unjustifiable.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would go with The Quiz Show over Forrest Gump as well. I mean, again, I have nothing against Forrest Gump. Right. To me, it just wasn't Best Picture that year, for sure. All right, Tim, what is your number two?
My number two is How Green Was My Valley, winning over arguably the best film of all time in Citizen Kane. Honestly, you know, that was probably more of a political reason why Citizen Kane did not win. I understand that John Ford, who directed How Green Was My Valley, was a very well-respected filmmaker at the time.
Sure.
And honestly, I've never seen How Green Was My Valley, so I can't describe how that film is or anything like that. But I have seen Citizen Kane, and it up until recently, it was considered the best film of all time. It's now considered the second best film of all time.
Oh man, what a big jump!
I know, but I just don't understand. Well, okay, no, like I said, I can understand with the political machinations of the time and how Orson Welles did not make any friends in the industry, how the movie was, you know, basically a biopic of Charles Forster Kane was modeled after William Randolph Hearst, and he was not happy, and you know, neither was the Hollywood industry. So honestly, that's probably one of the biggest missteps in Hollywood history.
Yeah, completely agree with that. My number two, I have to include a category that I'm pretty well known for talking about. So it would be a little bit of a travesty if I didn't leave it off here. For my number two, though, I'm going something with a little bit more recent. Although there's a ton to really choose from, I believe. But I'm talking about Best Original Score. I'm talking about Hans Zimmer and his score for Inception losing to The Social Network. Hans Zimmer's Inception score is arguably one of the best of the last decade. It's had a tremendous influence in the years since it came out. And I have nothing against Reznor and his score for The Social Network. It was fine. It definitely fit that movie really well. But for me, Hans Zimmer's Inception score, it blows it out of the water. And it blows all of them out of the water. Again, for that year, I would have picked John Powell's How to Train Your Dragon score a million times before I'd picked The Social Network. And again, this kind of just comes back to some of the stuff I've talked about on this show before and why I think the Academy just kind of blows over this topic more times than not. But Hans Zimmer getting screwed there, to me, was a huge travesty. That score, I think, will definitely be remembered a million times more than any of the other ones that is on this on that list for that year. So for me, that is my number two. It's an amazing score if you haven't heard it. If you want to just listen to one track from it, go listen to Time, and I promise you, you'll listen to it many times over. It's very, very good stuff. So that is my number two. All right, Tim, what is your number one?
My number one is John Cazale. Never went having an Oscar nomination. However, all of his films that he was in, all five of them were nominated for Best Picture.
He said that you were being tough on the negotiations, but if they could get a little help and close the deal fast, it'd be good for the family.
You believe that story? You believe that?
He said there was something in it for me, on my own.
I've always taken care of you, Fredo.
Taking care of me? You're my kid brother, and you take care of me? Did you ever think about that? Huh? Did you ever once think about that? Send Fredo off to do this, send Fredo off to do that. Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere. Send Fredo to pick somebody up at the airport. I'm your older brother, Mike, and I was stepped over.
That's the way Pop wanted it.
It ain't the way I wanted it!
John Cazale is one of the best character actors of the 70s. He was in The Godfather 1 and 2, The Conversation, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. And his performances in them are so significantly unique from each of his other performances. It was a brilliant character actor and wonderfully cast in each of those films. You know, and there was this documentary, this HBO documentary a couple of years ago, which featured, you know, the work of John Cazale and people just talking about his work. And Meryl Streep was involved in a relationship with him for a short period of time. And,
sure.
And it's, I recommend people really, you know, trying to find that. And, you know, while this isn't a specific, you know, award snub for one specific year or whatever, it's throughout the course of his career from 72 in The Godfather to 78 in The Deer Hunter. It's just remarkable, really, that he was not nominated for an Academy Award when he should. You could argue each of his roles were award worthy. You know, Sal in Dog Day Afternoon, and just the mopey guy, the long stringy haired guy next to Al Pacino, and he steals the show as much as Al Pacino does in that movie. Mm-hmm. And of course, Fredo is an iconic role.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So, and you know, he holds stature with each of the actors that he's next to in all of his films. And I mean, in The Conversation, he's next to Gene Hackman, and in The Deer Hunter, he's next to Robert De Niro and Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
So he's one of the most underrated, I think, character actors of all time. It's a shame that he was not nominated.
Yeah, that is a really great choice. I actually just rewatched the first two Godfather films not that long ago, and just to remember that performance and see that once again is tremendous. For him to not be nominated is quite interesting. So, but yeah, very, very, very good choice. For my number one, I'm going with your number two, Tim. I'm going with Citizen Kane, losing to How Green Was My Valley.
Is that really your idea of how to run a newspaper?
I don't know how to run a newspaper, Mr. Thatcher. I just try everything I can think of.
Charles, you know perfectly well there's not the slightest proof that this armada's off the Jersey
Coast. Hello, Mr. Bernstein.
Excuse me, Mr. Kane.
Can you prove it isn't?
This just
Mr. Bernstein,
in.
I'd like you to meet Mr. Thatcher.
I'll just
borrow. How do you do, Mr. Thatcher?
Leland,
Hello.
Mr. Thatcher, my ex-guardian.
From Cuba.
We have no secrets from our readers, Mr. Bernstein. Mr. Thatcher is one of our most devoted readers. He knows what's wrong with every copy of the Inquirer since I took over. Read the cable.
Girls delightful in Cuba, stop.
Could send you prose poems about scenery, but don't feel right spending your money. Stop. There is no war in Cuba. Signed, Wheeler. Any answer?
Yes, dear Wheeler, you provide the prose poems. I'll provide the war.
That's fine, Mr. Kane.
Yes, I rather liked myself.
Charles,
better right away.
I came to see you about this campaign of yours.
Citizen Kane, like you said, is not only one of the best films of all time, it's arguably the best film of all time. It's definitely in my top three, if not my top five, in my personal list. I haven't seen How Green Was My Valley either. I'm sure it was fine for its day, and it probably comes down to the political differences, as you were kind of touching on earlier. I just kind of wish that the Academy would kind of lose the politics, and I kind of feel like a big reason I wanted to go with this one is not only just for Citizen Kane itself, because I think that it was snubbed big time, but I also feel like this is the biggest problem with the Academy and pretty much anything along these same kind of lines, is the fact that the politics have to be involved. So you kind of lose the value of some of these picks a little bit because, I mean, how true really is it? I mean, how true are these best pictures? And you're having to campaign for these things and whatnot. So it's one of those things where it's fun to see what the Academy picks. It's fun to see who the Oscars go to, but you also have to kind of look at it at an arm's length, you know, because there's a lot of politics that are involved in it, and even going back to the 40s with Citizen Kane. So love Citizen Kane. It's definitely the one I would go with, and I think that's the consensus across the board, because I've heard the same thing from a lot of different people. So I just wish that the Academy and really any organization like this would just drop the politics and pick the winners for what they are, you know. So anyway, that's my rant of the week. So, before we move on, Tim, did you have any honorable mentions?
Yeah, you know, of course, Alfred Hitchcock never won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
He was nominated five times for an Oscar, but
how crazy is that?
It is pretty crazy. You know, you can talk about Citizen Kane, and that's, you know, one film over 1 year that was snubbed, but you think of the breadth of Alfred Hitchcock's career that spanned
sure, 50 years
or something like that, and he never won an award. It's almost a travesty.
Yeah, I totally agree.
United 93 should have won Best Director. You know, Paul Greengrass, I think, did a tremendous job in that film, and Martin Scorsese won the award, I think, as a makeup for his career and for The Departed. And The Departed won Best Picture, and United 93 was not even nominated that year for Best Picture, which is insane to me, because I think that is by far the best film of that year. It may be maybe the best film of the decade, maybe one of the most important post 9/11 films. You know, even just thinking about that film almost brings me to tears, because I was a wreck when I saw that film.
Yeah, it's incredible. Absolutely agree.
It is an amazingly visceral experience. And, you know, in the mold, in the vein of something like, you know, Schindler's List and 12 Years a Slave as one of those important type of films. And I if it wasn't for the Academy wanting Scorsese to win as a makeup for his career, I think Paul Greengrass would have won that. What about you?
Man, a lot. Dances with Wolves winning Best Picture.
God.
Over Goodfellas, I believe.
You know, I watched Dances with Wolves for the first time a few months ago, and I got to say, I don't know what the big deal about that movie is. I don't think it's very good at all.
It's been a really long time since I've seen it, so it's kind of hard for me to judge, but I'm kind of in that same boat. I mean, I love Goodfellas. It's definitely, from what I remember, it's way better than Dances with Wolves, too.
It is. So. Yes. Yeah, you know, we talked about our 100th episode, and that's one film that we discussed. And that is a huge misstep. I don't think it's top three or top five worthy for me in Academy history, but it's a really big misstep.
Yeah, completely agree. I also had Tom Hanks, or was Saving Private Ryan losing, but I also had Tom Hanks losing Best Actor that year, too. I thought that was one that he should have won. Sandra Bullock winning Best Actress for The Blind Side, something a little bit more recent. That was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson losing, Best Supporting Actor and for Pulp Fiction. That's, like I said on your podcast, that's my favorite performance of his. I still think to this day it's arguably his best performance. So that to me was a bit ridiculous. Crash winning Best Picture in 2005. And really, I have like five others, but I'll just stop there. So,
I think Judy Garland was not nominated in The Wizard of Oz, and yeah. she's great in that.
Yeah, I almost feel like we could go year by year
yeah.
and pick several.
It's a whole other episode books. In itself.
It really is. So. All right. Well, if you agree or disagree with our picks, you can let us know. Email us in sessionfilm@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. Just want to talk about the poll question we had on our website this last week before we move on. And we simply asked, who will win Best Picture tonight at the 86th Academy Awards? And far and away, 12 Years a Slave won this poll with 79% of the vote. So that was quite the margin. I don't know if I expected it to be quite that high, but a lot of people pulling for 12 Years.
I think it will win, though.
I agree. Totally agree. And real quick before we move on, just want to say a thank you to those that are supporting us. If you want to support us, there are a couple ways to do that. You can go to our website at incessionfilm.com. And we have some fun premium bonus content that you can purchase for just a small donation of 99 cents. And all of it goes directly back into supporting the show. Or you can just donate directly to the show. And that button is also on our website at incessionfilm.com. So we thank you for all of those that are doing that. Okay, well, next Tim and I are going to discuss some of the latest movie news that came out over the last week, including a new awesome Godzilla trailer that I cannot wait to talk about. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast. This is episode 54, and now Tim and I are going to discuss some of the latest movie news that kind of came out over the last week. And the first one we're going to talk about is a sad piece of news, and I'm sure all of you by now have heard that the great Harold Ramis passed away this last Monday. He's known for doing a lot of great stuff: Groundhog Day, Ghostbusters, Caddyshack, a bunch of other things that he was involved in. So I guess just to kind of throw it out there real fast, Tim, what are some of the things that you'll remember from the great Harold Ramis?
Well, I think first and foremost is one of the best comedies of all time, and that's Groundhog Day.
I totally agree. Yeah.
That is a film that was underrated at the time and has grown in the public consciousness over the years, I think. And, you know, 21 years now since it came out. And it really is just a fantastic, well-written film. You know, he wrote it. I believe directed it as well, right?
Yeah. He wrote and directed it. Yeah.
It's tremendous. Obviously, he had that relationship with Bill Murray in order to be able to coax that performance out of him. But yeah, the Ghostbusters films. You know, as much as people deride the second one, there are some pretty funny moments in that.
Sure.
You know, the first one, of course, is another one of the best comedies of the 80s, and you know, he was just obviously a very talented writer and even director. He helped write Stripes and he acted in that as well, and he was extremely funny, you know. So yeah, it's sad. It really is. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I can only echo your sentiments. I mean, I'm right there with you. I absolutely love Groundhog Day. I think it's something that I actually watched in the last year or so, and a lot of that film just holds up tremendously well. It's so well done. Ghostbusters, I mean, I don't know what else there is really to say. I mean, the stuff that he's been involved in is great. So he definitely will be missed. I don't know if he had any plans on being a part of Ghostbusters 3 at all. I did see that they're still moving forward in that project and whatnot. But Yeah, I mean, he was involved in a lot of great stuff that when you think of the 80s and you think especially of comedies, you think of things that he was directly involved in. So
he also directed 4 episodes of The Office.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. But
yeah, neither did I until just now. And he also directed and wrote Bedazzled, starring Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth Hurley. And that's kind of underrated, too. I think there's some pretty funny moments in that.
I actually haven't seen that one. That was like early 2000s, I believe,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was 2000, yes.
Yeah, that'll be one I have to check out. If you had to put a favorite on anything that he did, what would you say?
Well, what I started out with, it's Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's one of the best comedies of all time. It's just such a existential examination. It really is tremendous. I remember going to see that movie in the theater, and I saw it with... I mean, when did that movie come out? In 93? So, yeah,
93,
I was 15 at the time, so I went to see it with my parents, and my mom was dragged to it, and she hates comedies to begin with, and it was, even she was laughing, you know, and
sure.
it's just such a great, well-written film.
Yeah, completely agree.
Well, let's not forget about National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yeah, I was actually just about to say that before we're moving on. Yeah, that's another great one. And that's one he directed, I believe, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Very good stuff. All right, well, let's move on to something not quite as sad. And let's talk about the new Godzilla trailer that came out this last week. And this one was quite different than the first one. This one featured Bryan Cranston very prominently in what I think is one of the best trailers we've seen so far this year. So what do you...
I didn't see him wearing a yellow hazmat suit.
No, we didn't. But he still looks pretty awesome. But what did you think about this trailer?
It promised on the... You know, it extended on its delivery of the first teaser trailer, which was really well done and well cut. I wish it featured a little bit more of the skydivers though that they showed in the first trailer.
Sure.
You're right. With Bryan Cranston being featured in this, you know, it looks very promising. Of course, you know, Gareth Edwards, who directed Monsters.
Yes.
Very promising independent film from 2010, which was really well done, and I'm really looking forward to this film. I know that I'm definitely going to be reviewing this on my podcast.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a ton of fun. I think one of the interesting things about it, and I don't know how much they'll go into this or not, but when you look at this new trailer and kind of the direction they take with it. In a lot of ways, it almost looks like it's acting as a sequel to the original, which would be kind of interesting if that's the route they took. There was a lot of references toward the original in this new trailer anyway, despite what kind of direction it goes. But I thought that was pretty fascinating on top of all the cool action and the CG. And I love how they're teasing the Godzilla, although we do see it a little bit. I just think it's brilliant marketing, and I think especially to throw Bryan Cranston in there the way they did was just absolutely fabulous. So,
well, talking about marketing, you do remember the marketing for the other Godzilla remake, right?
Yeah, I actually don't remember much of the trailers for that one.
It was coming off of Independence Day, and it was marketed in the same way, in which it was very sparse on its reveal of Godzilla. I think this trailer though is much more prominent with its featuring of Godzilla and the monster.
Sure.
Like you said, the marketing is very good in this. Hopefully the movie itself delivers.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think after some of the excitement I've seen with trailers over the last couple of years, I've learned to kind of get excited, but also kind of keep myself at an arm's length last year. Because, you know, when I look at some of my worst disappointments over the last couple of years, getting way too overexcited over the trailers, I think, was a big piece of that. So, but sometimes you can't help it. You see a trailer like that and you get too excited. So I'm sorry.
And the cast is
yeah. So like films like that and like Guardians of the Galaxy and things like that, maybe I'm setting myself up for disappointment, but it's hard not to get excited though. Okay, well, let's move on. There's another piece of news out there that was kind of interesting, and it looks like the rumor has it that there may be a new Matrix trilogy, which could be kind of interesting. What do you think about the idea of them revisiting this universe?
I don't know. I'm actually currently going through the original trilogy. I just rewatched the first two films a few weeks ago, and I have to catch up on the last one. And when I rewatched the first one, I got to say it's probably one of the best science fiction films of all time. It really holds up tremendously. It's really amazing. And the sequels, you know, weren't as strong, but I still think that they're pretty good. With a new trilogy, it's interesting. Maybe it's just a cash grab by the studios, and I'm not sure what is. It's Warner Brothers that owns this, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe they're going to try to work a deal with the Wachowskis in order to expand this universe even more. And I don't know. Did you say it was going to be a prequel?
Yeah, according to Latino Review, it looks like Warner Brothers and the Wachowskis siblings are in the early stages of planning out a prequel trilogy. That's what it says on their website, anyway.
See, I don't know about the point. What's the point of that? Because, I remember at the end of the third film, they. And throughout the second and third film, they explain that this is an event that has been, you know, pretty much revolving. It's a revolving event.
Sure.
Where it happens.
Sure.
Every so often, I don't know how many years, but every so often the humans uprise and there's another battle and all that kind of stuff. There's another Neo. There's always another
sure.
Neo. So I don't know what the point of a prequel would be, if it would have Keanu Reeves or, you know, Morpheus and would it have another Agent Smith, or would it be I don't know.
What
there
is,
I don't know what there is to explore in a prequel. I can see something in another trilogy after the events of the third film. I think there is more to explore there, whether it's, you know, finally overcoming this cycle of events that they discussed in the last two films. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of like you. I'm not exactly sure where they're wanting to take it. To me, when I first heard it, the first thought I had was, well, this is just another cash grab. I think that's just kind of what they're going off of. I mean, when you look at Star Wars and what they were doing with their prequel, now they're coming out with another trilogy sequels, The Hobbit doing another trilogy, essentially prequel, I guess, to the Lord of the Rings stuff. I don't know. I mean, to me, that's just kind of where it fits. To me, it's in that vein, and I'm not exactly sure if this is something that we need. To me, it just sounds like something that they're trying to put together to just make a bunch of money. I think it would be kind of interesting if they explore some of maybe some more background stuff on Morpheus and maybe some of those other characters, and, you know, maybe what happens with them within this universe before we catch up to the original Matrix. I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of the sequels, although I loved the first Matrix movie, so I don't know. It just really depends on where they go with it. I'm not too excited about it, though. I'll say that. So, especially when you look at the Star Wars prequels, when I look at these first two Hobbit movies, so far prequels and trilogies in my mind are not equaling out to be great stuff. But it does equal out to lots and lots and lots and lots of money. So, my guess is that's where they're going anyway.
Yeah.
But here's the hoping for the best. So, okay, well, the last thing we just want to talk on just real fast is last night the Independent Spirit Awards happened, and 12 Years a Slave took home just about everything almost that it was nominated for. So what did you think about the Independent Spirit Awards last night?
Well, I mean, you know, with the winners, like you said, 12 Years a Slave, you know, took a lot, as it deservedly so, I think. You know, it's interesting to see that Francis Ha was on there for Best Feature, which is a movie that was, I think, was in my top five, at least in my top 10 of the year last year.
Sure.
That was a strong, you know, it looks like a strong field anyways, you know, with all the movies that were nominated. You know, All Is Lost, another one that was in my top five of the year. You know, Best Director, you know, this is all like a precursor to the Oscars, I guess, in which of the winners of, I guess, which should win. You know, with Best Male Lead, it went to Matthew McConaughey. I haven't seen Dallas Buyers. I've heard many great things about Matthew McConaughey's performance in Dallas Buyers.
Very, very good.
And, you know, if it went to Shwelty Ejiofor, I would not have a problem with that either, because, you know, 12 Years a Slave was my number one film of last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the screenplay of 12 Years and Lupita Nyong'o winning for Best Supporting, and it looks like Jared Leto won for Best Supporting Male. Once, like I said, I haven't seen Dallas Buyers Club, but I've heard he's great in it. Yeah, it looks like, you know, there are a lot of deserving winners, a lot of even just deserving nominations going through this list. So what do you think?
Yeah, I had a really good time watching this last night. I thought 2013 was a really strong year for independent film. So there's a lot of great nominees here. I guess first to start off, I just want to say I love Patton Oswalt, and his hosting last night was hilarious. And what he did with the jokes he had with Bruce Dern was just hysterical. And if you guys didn't get a chance to see this, at one point, I think they were doing like Best Supporting Actress or whatever, and Andy Samberg and I forget who else was out there with them. They didn't have the envelope with them. And at some point, he steps onto the stage and he says, for the first time in award show history, we are going to have a drone drop off the envelope. And this like helicopter toy looking thing kind of flies onto the stage and like drops the envelope down for them, which was hilarious. It was very good. It had like Star Wars like music behind them. It was just really funny. And especially if you know Patton Oswalt, it makes tons of sense for him to do something like that. So, yeah, it was very good stuff. But anyway, yeah, 12 Years taking home Best Feature. Not surprising, but I love the nominees here. All Is Lost is a film that I love that got snubbed on all the other big award shows out there, but was one that I really, really enjoyed. Nebraska. Loved. And I loved seeing Inside Llewyn Davis here. The first time I saw Inside Llewyn Davis, I wasn't a huge fan. I liked it, but didn't love it. But it's one of those movies that if you let it sit with you for a little while, I feel like you'll start to love it and love it and love it more. And I have really, really grown to like that film, or a lot, actually. And
agreed. That's a movie that's grown on me as well.
Yeah, I still listen to the soundtrack all the time. So I really, really like it. So it was cool to see that here, and Frances Ha as well. Shane Carruth, Upstream Color, for Best Director. I love seeing that here. I still can't tell you anything about that movie, but I love that he's here. I really liked it quite a bit. J.C. Chandor as well. So, and Jeff Nichols for Mud. It's good to see another Matthew McConaughey film finally get some love. So, so that was very cool.
Julie Delpy nominated for Best Lead. Yeah. That's fantastic.
And Shailene Woodley, if you like Shailene Woodley, you should have seen her last night. She was gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. But yeah, it was really cool to kind of just see some of these other films get some love. I love that Robert Redford was also nominated for Best Male Lead and All Is Lost. So yeah, very good stuff. Fruitvale Station got some love last night. Gotta love that. So I think they ended up winning for Best Screenplay. Maybe not Best Screenplay. They won for something. Or Best, what it was is first feature film from a director or something like that. So
good.
Very good stuff. So yeah, it was a really good time.
You must be happy with Best International Film. Blue is the warmest color.
Yes, finally. Good God. Yeah, very good stuff. Blue is the warmest color. Should have gotten a lot more love than it did. But anyway, the Independent Spirit Awards last night was very fun. Okay, well, we're going to move on. Next, we're going to talk about films we've seen over the last week. I don't know about you, Tim. I got to see quite a few. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Awesome. Everything is awesome. Stepped in mud, got new brown shoes. Going from a win, then it's awesome to lose.
You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast. This is episode 54. And real quick, we're just going to talk about films we got to see over the last week. So, Tim, lay it out for us. What did you get to see this week?
Well, not only have I been watching films, I've been watching a lot of TV, too. And what I'm working my way through right now is season 4 of The Wire.
Very nice.
And, you know, I watched the first 3 seasons maybe, I don't know, 3 years ago or so. And I really enjoyed them. And it's going through this 4th season, which I'm about 9 episodes in. And I'm realizing that it may be one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen. It is such a well-written show. It's by David Simon, I believe, and it is such a well-researched and well-done show. I don't know. Have you ever seen this show?
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I would totally recommend it. I'm sure you've heard this from tons of people. Mm-hmm. It's one of those shows, as I've done a little bit of research, is that David Simon wrote this with the intention of 5 seasons. So he had this overall overarching story that he had intended to tell about Baltimore and the system. And what that system is the political system, the police, the authority system, and the system on the streets, and how all of these interweave and interconnect, and how everything is connected. And in season 4, they introduced the school system. One of the a former cop that they featured in season 3 is now turned himself into a teacher, and it's featuring that and how they're introducing a new program for more of the outspoken, not so well behaved children who are also dealing drugs in the street. And all of this connects to the police system and the political system. A person, a selectman from season 3, is now running for mayor in season 4, and how all of this interweaves. It's tremendous, tremendous. Obviously, I think many of the people who are listening to this are saying, yes, Tim, we already know it's tremendous. So I would totally recommend watching that.
Very nice.
You know, with her being on my top 10 list of last year, I realized, you know, that's the first Spike Jonze film I've ever seen. So I decided to go back and start his filmography. So okay. I went and watched Being John Malkovich. I had seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is a really fun film. That's a really well done film. It probably the best Cameron Diaz performance I've seen. I don't think her much of her as an actress, but I think that with somebody like John Cusack beside her and being directed by Spike Jonze, you know, she did a great job.
Sure,
I will say though, Catherine Keener was nominated for an Academy Award for this film. I got to say, she is downright awful in this movie.
Interesting.
I think she is completely miscast, and she is probably how should I put it? She was, I think, hadn't found her niche in Hollywood yet, and wasn't cast in the correct roles at this point. And it wasn't until later that she was finally cast in more appropriate roles. I really love the psychology of this film. And I immediately, the first time he goes into this hole, into John Malkovich's head, my immediate thought was, what if John Malkovich went down this hole? Sure enough, that's answered later on in the film.
Yeah.
And it's really well done. I think it's really funny, well done. It's pretty good.
It's been a long time since I've seen that. I'll have to revisit that one. I remember liking it quite a bit, though, the first time I saw it.
Yeah. And speaking about television again, like I said, I've been going through. I caught the first 2 series of Prime Suspect, which is a British television series from the early 90s, which is the first series and the second series are only 2 episodes long, but they're both like an hour and 40 minutes. So, and that's the way a lot of British television is. They run in very short runs, number of episodes per season. If you think of like Luther, there's only been like 4 or 5 episodes per season. There's many British TV shows like that. And I kind of appreciate that. I think I've been gravitating a lot towards British television because they're kind of different, you know, than what I'm used to seeing here. So, you know, and this stars Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren plays a chief inspector at a police station. And it's really interesting to see back in the early 90s, subject matter that they were dealing with, because she becomes the first woman like chief inspector on a police squad. Mm-hmm. And she's like dealing with sexism on the police force and trying to earn the respect of her male counterparts, which is really well done. It's really well done. So, and it involves, you know, a series of murders that they're trying to solve. And it's much in the mold. It's a great police procedural, if you like procedurals. The first series, I think, is better than the second series. The second series has a good story, but there's some acting in here, which is atrocious. not by Helen Mirren, of course.
Sure, she's, of course. Yeah.
I also had a chance to catch up with a film from last year, You're Next.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Did you see this?
Yeah, it's sometime like November or something like that.
Yeah. My co-host, Hermano, was very high on this film, and it was even in his top 10 of the year. And I don't know what the big deal is. I remember when he originally discussed it earlier that he said that if you go into it as if it's more of a comedy, then you might get more out of it. And I honestly, I didn't know what to get out of it. Even with that mindset, it's an interesting story. I like the twist that it takes as to who the protagonist becomes and the role that person delivers throughout the rest of the film and how much ass is kicked you know, throughout the film by that person.
Sure.
But overall, I didn't care for it that much. I didn't find it all that entertaining. I don't know. I couldn't put my finger on it.
I'm right there with you. I have a hard time with that genre to begin with. I'm not the biggest fan of it, although I do have a lot of respect for it. But
you mean the horror genre?
Yeah. I was like you. I had a hard time with it, but I know a lot of friends of mine who do like that stuff that really enjoyed it for what it was. I don't know. For me, it wasn't my cup of tea, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I've seen within the past couple of weeks. What about you?
Oh, man. Well, I got to see a lot. I'm just going to kind of just go through these quickly. But I finally did get to – we got to finish the movie Casablanca. It's one I started with the fiance last week, as I mentioned on the show. But I got to sit her down. We finally watched it, and we got all the way through it. And it's like – poor Brandy, she's just like she doesn't quite fully understand things sometimes in film like this, especially. And throughout the whole time, she's just like, I don't know what's going on.
Oh, jeez.
I have to pause and like catch her up to speed. It just sometimes getting her attention on this stuff is a challenge. But very good movie, obviously. Loved it. And then I rewatched Patriot Games as I watched The Hunt for Red October last week, so I decided to catch up with this one, and I'm still a fan of the first one, The Hunt for Red October. I'm a bigger fan of that one than the Harrison Ford ones. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but
you know, I gotta say, I'm a huge Harrison Ford fan. Okay. In these two films, I think he really sure. likes them. I mean, he really does a good job in them. I really like his performance in those two.
Yeah, I don't think he's terrible by any means, and it's still a good film, don't get me wrong. I think just when I'm comparing it versus the Alec Baldwin film, I think I just like that one better. But yeah, I mean, it's still a good watch. Still would recommend it for sure. I also rewatched Goodfellas and Pulp Fiction to prepare for your podcast that we recorded this last week. Two films that I really, really love for sure. I didn't get to talk about Goodfellas on your show as much, but definitely a great rewatch there. Had a ball with that one. And anytime I can watch John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson do a film together, I'm there. So
going back to Goodfellas, I mean, one of the things that I came away with that film was the increasing paranoia that you know, just escalates throughout the film.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something that you gathered or if you caught something.
No. Oh, yeah. I mean, they definitely referenced that several times whether it's through the narrative or whether we actually see that. But it almost they're always talking about how, well, we're always having to look over our shoulder and things like that. Or, I mean, there was even that one scene where the main character anyway, and his wife has a gun pointed at him.
Henry Hill.
Yeah. And you know, and he has the line where he's like, I'm always having to look over my shoulder in the streets. I don't need that at home. And that just kind of increases more and more as the movie goes on.
I love Lorraine Bracco in that film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like everything about it. I mean, for the sake of your show, to really put up Goodfellas versus Pulp Fiction is a difficult task for me because I really like them both quite a bit. So,
yeah.
That was those were fun rewatches for sure. So I'm glad I got to do that. I did watch Bottle Rocket as we were getting ready, as I was prepping for the new movie series for this show. But I'm going to save any comments for when we hopefully we'll start that next week. And I also got to sort of rewatch The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise. Now this is a movie that I had started to watch some time back, a long time ago, but I never finished it. I had only watched maybe the first 35, 40 minutes of it, but I never did finish it. So I went and rewatched the whole thing once again. And it's a movie that I liked. I really enjoyed it. Another score that I like, I think that was Hans Zimmer that did that one as well. So it's one of those movies that if you put in a good score, for me personally, I think it just enhances the film even further.
You don't say.
So, yeah, I'm guessing you're not a big fan of it then.
No. I'm just saying about reacting.
Yeah.
Enjoyment of scores.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed.
Exactly right. Yeah, good score enhances it for me. So, yeah, so I had a good time with that one. That was a fun, I guess, sort of rewatch. But and then there was a couple of documentaries I watched was The Square and Dirty Wars, two documentaries that came out this last year. So, watch those. Very good. I would highly recommend them. Very political stuff, though. So it really depends on where you sit with some of that stuff. That will depend on how you react to it. But it's definitely explored thoroughly in both of them. I thought they were done very, very well. And then the last thing I'll just say is one of the few TV shows that I watch is True Detective.
Oh, and yes. It
only gets better and better and better, and I'm kind of dreading the series ending because I just want it to keep going.
You know, one thing that I learned was that recently, I didn't know, was that it's a standalone first season,
yeah,
and the second season will feature new characters, new story, which, you know, it was kind of sad because Matthew McConaughey is so effing awesome.
Great.
In this show. You know, the whole cast is great, but he is just continuing his performance revival. It's tremendous to me.
It's crazy.
And,
yeah.
And the series, like you said, I'll echo, it's fantastic. It is a great, great series. And I'm really anxious to see what they might do with the second season.
I know. I completely agree with that. And I think the one cool thing about them just doing one story per season is that it gives them the realm of shooting it like a movie, which they do. And very many sequences you don't really get in TV shows a whole lot. So
And hopefully they can get other really strong actors for a one-off season, you know, just like they did with the first season.
Yeah, I totally agree. Going back to the comment you had about Matthew McConaughey, though, one thing that was said at the Independent Awards last night, I think it was Jared Leto, when he was accepting his award, he said, I think I'm going to do a reverse reconnaissance and I'm just going to do all rom-coms now or something like that, which was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, the stuff that he's doing, Matthew McConaughey, the stuff he's doing now is just absolutely incredible. So yeah, so if you haven't seen True Detective, definitely go do that. It's incredible. And that's pretty much all I got to see this week, which was pretty fun. A lot of movie watching. But
cool.
Tim, thanks for being here, man. It was great to have you on the show. I really appreciate you serving as a co-host duties this week.
Not a problem. I really enjoyed it.
So where can the people find you on the internet?
Oh, they can find my show, which I co-host with Wally and Hermano, First Time Watchers podcast. You can find it on iTunes by searching First Time Watchers. You can find us on Twitter. We're always on Twitter. We're always interacting with people at 1ST Time Watchers. You can find our shows and more information about us on our firsttimewatchers.blogspot.com and we also firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Yeah, so please go find them. Follow them on Twitter, like them on Facebook, subscribe to their podcast on iTunes. As I mentioned earlier, you're going to have a ball, I promise. Very, very good stuff. If you want to find us on the internet, you can do that in several different ways. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/incessionfilm. You can follow us on Twitter at incessionfilm and on Google Plus and on YouTube. And you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can do that in two different ways. You can do that on Facebook by clicking the newsletter tab or on our site at incessionfilm.com/newsletter. You can check us out on Letterboxd, which we put all of our reviews up there as well. Just search In Session Film. If you want to listen to the In Session Film podcast, you can do that a couple of different ways. You can do that on iTunes. Please subscribe and leave us a review. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. You can find us on Stitcher and on SoundCloud as well. Or you can just go to our website, Tim, at incessionfilm.com/listen-now. You can listen to everything anytime you want right there, which is fun. And as I mentioned earlier, the In Session Film podcast is supported by our awesome listeners like you. Again, if you want to do that, just go to our website, incessionfilm.com, click on the premium tab in our main menu, and you can get any of our awesome premium bonus podcasts for just a small donation of 99 cents. And you can get everything that we do on our mobile app for just a one-time fee of $1.99. You can find that app on the Amazon market for Android devices and on the podcast box app for iOS devices. And all those details are on the site at incessionfilm.com/apps. And that will do it for this week's show. Man, Tim, a lot going on this week. You excited for the Oscars tonight?
I'm very excited for the Oscars. I think that a lot of the show awards are probably pretty set, except for maybe the Best Picture. I think it's a toss-up as to three of them that will win. Mm-hmm. I have a strong feeling that 12 Years a Slave will win, but I think it's a toss-up between that one, Gravity, and American Hustle. Yeah, whether or not you think those are deserving, I think that those are the three that are up there. I think everything else, though, is pretty well set. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it definitely comes down to those. For me, personally, the ones that better win is Stephen Price and his score for Gravity. That better win, or I'm going to have to revolt. And Idina Menzel better win for Let It Go.
See her perform.
Yeah, I know. I'm very, very excited for that. So,
you know what? One thing to add on to Nonstop, the only thing we were missing was Liam Neeson landing the effing plane himself.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that would have been pretty fun. So, do you have any other final thoughts before we get out of here today?
I don't know, man. I'm just anxious to get this weekend over with the Academy Awards and get another week of movie watching. And
yeah, for sure. I'm very excited for the Grand Budapest Hotel, which comes out next week. And that's what we will be reviewing on the show, which should be a lot of fun. And we are going to be doing an extra film podcast later this week on The Wind Rises, which I got to see. That's another one that I got to see this last week that I didn't touch on since we're going to do that later. So have you seen that one yet?
I have not. No, I have not.
Very good. Very, very good stuff.
And if I actually may take this time to plug in my our 100th episode extravaganza.
Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
We just released our first part one of our episode 100 extravaganza, and this week we'll be releasing part two, which is going to feature three of our listeners. And then next week will be part three, in which it'll be an extended movie battle royale segment. And for
those
that have listened to our episodes, they'll know what movie battle royale is. And in the last part of that third segment, we'll be kind of doing a retrospective of first 100 episodes. So hopefully people can check that out.
Yeah, definitely go and do that. Like I said, your guys' podcast is a lot of fun. I listen to it every single week, so you guys should follow me in doing that. So very good stuff. I can't wait. I actually haven't listened to the Goodfellas Pulp Fiction podcast yet, so I got to do that before the Oscars tonight. So should be fun. Thanks again, Tim, for joining me. Really, really appreciate you being here.
It was a blast.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you guys next time on the In Session Film podcast.
What about Nonstop, though?
Nonstop? Of
an action thriller wherein a U.S. Marshal has to solve a murder mystery and clear his own name, all whilst flying on an airplane 40,000 feet above the Atlantic Ocean.
What about Nonstop Mode?
Nonstop, starring the sexy and mysterious Julianne Moore, and also starring the one and only
Liam Neeson.
I'm gonna break it down and I can talk about Liam Neeson's.
What about Nonstop Mode?
Come on. That's a green lollipop. That's delicious and nutritious.
Take it. How you gonna be on a plane getting a text message?
What's going on, Marshall? I'm gonna kill somebody every 20 minutes. Did I get your attention now, Marshall? Come on, Flush.
I am not hijacking this plane.
I am trying to save it.
What about Monsters now?
Excuse me. Could one of you get my car, please?
You Liam Neeson's?
Yes. Yep, I am.
Liam Neeson's from Tooken?
Yeah.
You are the Liam Neeson's from the graves where all the wolves and you falling off the cliffs and it being arctic cold and whatnot?
Yeah.
Liam Neeson's from the upcoming picture. Nonstop.
That's right.
Oh, get your gun, man.
Oh, no, my gun. There's your gun.
Oh, no, the cabin is no longer pressurized. Slow. Where's my gun? Oh, watch. Oh, no, I'm Liam Neeson. It's a slow motion.
What?
I'm flying through the air. What's up?
Plane crash! Liam Neeson is my chance!
Hello? Could anyone get my car, please?
I've got a plane to catch.
A take to the camera?
A tie-in with